Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we'll continue our series on hospital-acquired conditions with Rick Beaver, Senior Consultant Director at Vizient. We're going to cover our battle against those conditions. Rick, welcome back.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me and really glad to be back.
Well, I'm learning a lot. So let's talk about surgical site infections, or SSIs, for colon and abdominal hysterectomy procedures. Rick, the Vizient Clinical Database, or our CDB, saw a huge rise in post-surgical sepsis during the pandemic. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I've been reading a lot of articles, and you'll see articles probably coming out for the next several years that analyzes what has happened in the pre-COVID and into the COVID year. And unfortunately, it looks like years. Mm-hmm. The main impact of the increase in sepsis, from what I've been reading and what I've been seeing, is a significant reduction in the number of elective procedures during 2020. And in fact, there were many months where elective procedures were eliminated in almost every state in the nation. And so what that ended up doing is increasing the emergency surgeries that were taking place in addition to surgeries that were being done on COVID patients. And so some of the 2021 already published reports talk about complications in COVID surgery patients and that there was a significant increase in the severe complications, including sepsis for COVID patients. But then if you also go and look at some of the literature, it compares the number of complications and sepsis for patients that were elective surgery versus non-elective or emergent surgery. And it showed in many cases anywhere from a 2 to 400% increase in significant complications for those cases that were emergency cases. So just based on the fact that elective cases almost went away for the year 2020, just on that alone, the emergency cases are now a major component of total surgery for 2020. And therefore, based on previous evidence, you would expect complications, things like sepsis, to increase.
So Rick, has there been any improvements in SSIs?
If you look at data from the CDC and from the CMS between 2015 and 2020, surgical site infection has improved slightly. But if you look at just colon SSI, it has reduced only about 16%, which is about 3% improvement per year. But if you look at SSI for hysterectomy cases, there's been zero improvement over the last 5 years. So when you compare surgical site infection rates to the other infections like C. diff, Caudi, and central line infection, C. diff had a 42% reduction over that same time period. Caudi, 26% reduction, and central line infection, a 31% reduction nationally. So contrast 26, 31, and 42 with a 16 and a 0% reduction for colon and then a hysterectomy SSI, respectively. So you can see there has been some improvement. However, not nearly the rate of improvement that you've seen across the nation for some of the other major infections.
Wow. So why are SSIs occurring?
We find it's a combination of reasons. One is what we have found at Vizient in our engagements and also reading in literature. It's a combination of a patient factor and also hospital operational factor. So patient factors such as an aging population, also an increase in immunocompromised patients, and other factors, obesity, things like that, that are known to be high contributors to SSI. So that's the patient factor. And on the operational factor, when we go into hospitals, they all seem to have a great list of, some people call them key drivers, meaning what are the 6 or 8 or 10 things that we say we do through the perioperative process to make sure that we do everything that we can to prevent a surgical site infection. And in some cases, either they report internally that they have extremely high compliance, or they just say, we do all of these things and don't measure the compliance. So what we do in our engagements is ask, can we go to the floor and observe care? And so when we compare what they say they do or what they report they do, in many cases, not all cases, we find the compliance to their key drivers, again, those metrics that the hospital has identified to help prevent a surgical site infection, is not anywhere near the compliance that they're reporting. And also for hospitals that say, we don't measure what we do, but we say we do all of these things, we find in one case a term called rolled through yield, meaning how many patients get every one of the key drivers that they say they are providing. And we found a 1.8% compliance to the bundle. So as you can see, it's a combination of more severe patient conditions that could possibly cause an SSI and not always great compliance to the metrics that have been reported in literature and that are adopted in hospitals to help prevent an SSI.
I can certainly see that. So let's talk about prophylactic antibiotic use. Is that of any help, and does the timing have anything to do with it?
It does. For many, many years, from probably back in 2005, somewhere around that time, when it was recommended that prophylactic antibiotics should be given within 1 hour of surgery prior to cut time, that percent compliance has gone up almost to 100%. Every once in a while, we find a couple hospitals that have problems with the way they schedule patients and when they come in and then applying the prophylactic antibiotic. And so they're missing the timing in some cases. But overall, the antibiotic prior to surgery has been a very high performing component of care. However, there is a lot of literature that talks about the use or overuse of antibiotics post-surgery. And a few articles talked about, in sometimes 85% of cases, a post-surgical antibiotic is not required. And so some hospitals, what they're doing is saying you can only order the antibiotic pre-surgery. You can't order pre- and post-surgical antibiotics. You have to wait till post-surgery and have an indication for the requirement for an antibiotic post-surgery. We haven't found many hospitals go after the post-surgical antibiotic administration yet. Many years ago, the requirement was at least terminate any post-surgery antibiotics within 24 hours post-surgery, and everybody does that really well. But the time from end of surgery to that 24-hour period has not yet been a major focus. Now, as everyone knows, the literature states that the overuse of antibiotic can also be a cause for surgical site infection or other infections.
Sure.
I haven't been not able to find any literature that confirms hospitals that had a use of antibiotic post-surgery that then terminated these antibiotics to see whether there really was an impact on SSI. So through all of my engagements, I have yet to find an organization that is practicing the significant reduction in post-surgical same-day antibiotics that would provide us with a measurement of the impact. And so I've been trying to find literature. It might be out there. I just haven't found it yet. So right now, it's just an implication that that could possibly help, but not sure about the actual benefit if that work was able to go forward.
Yeah, I'm curious to that too. But what about the use of chlorhexidine baths? Have that been found to be helpful?
Yeah, that's another interesting one. If you look in literature, it's replete with reports of a significant impact of the implementation of chlorhexidine baths pre-surgery on the reduction in surgical site infections. And there was a report I was just reading the other day from the World Health Organization that says a review of literature suggests it's not as impactful as some believe. However, if you look at the antimicrobial benefits of chlorhexidine compared to provodone iodine baths that used to be administered or even soap and water, the use of chlorhexidine has an exponential higher reduction in bacteria and also a long duration for preventing the attachment of any bacteria to the skin surface for days beyond the application. So I'm seeing almost every hospital, especially in surgery, that recommend chlorhexidine baths. However, in some cases, I see them using, let's let's say for colon surgery, they're using the wipes that are only allowed to be used on arms, legs, the chest, and the back, but are missing the attention to additional perineal care that would help knock down organisms that would be in the same area of the surgery. So there are several products that are now reported to be equally effective to CHG and that are less aggressive to mucosal or not even at all aggressive to mucosal tissue, and that are equally effective in the long-term benefits of providing antimicrobial protection. And so we're seeing experiments in many different organizations, some of them reporting the benefits of the added perineal care. And so those are some of the things that we work with organizations when we're working on SSI.
So what are ways organizations are mitigating SSIs right now?
Going back to what I was talking about would be to say, if you have metrics, or let's just call them key drivers, we'll stay with that theme, that you believe prevent SSIs, it would be to accurately measure and honestly measure with validation. When we say honestly, whoever is reporting, we have somebody go around and we go out and we validate. If they say we're 100% on something, we go out and we watch enough of a population that we can then validate whether that 100% is accurate. If it's not, we help them get to 100%. And if they are, then what we do is draw a line in the sand to say, when did we achieve or they achieve the 100% compliance to the key drivers, and then try to do a statistical analysis to see what was the impact of achieving 100%, to see do they actually have key drivers or process metrics that are truly a preventive measure for a surgical site infection. So that's the one piece. However, what one of the additional thoughts that we have on SSIs is we look at a 360-degree approach. So we have built a risk model that has been able to identify with statistical correlation a high-risk patient population that you could pay additional attention to in the pre-anesthesia clinic or possibly all the way back to the surgeon's office. And so by providing a hospital an analysis of, let's say, the last 1,000 cases that they did and putting it into a risk model and showing which patients they could possibly pay additional attention to. So by applying the key drivers that we talked to perioperatively, but preoperatively, and one example is some hospitals are doing multiple CHG or equally effective bathings with the products, like I mentioned, prior to surgery to do everything that they can to knock down any bacteria. Also, when we see some hospitals there, they know that a person that smokes has a higher risk for surgical site infection. But what they do is they'll ask not to smoke for the days leading up to surgery. But I think some of the literature suggests that if you can get them to quit, which is extremely difficult, for at least 4 weeks prior to surgery, their oxygen uptake and also the skin tissue oxygenation because of not smoking for a longer period prior to surgery has been a benefit to reducing surgical site infection. And to do that, you have to go upstream far enough to catch them so it's not day of surgery or it's not a couple days before surgery when the preoperative surgical nurses call just to touch base with you. But it goes all the way back to the surgeon's office and it uses the risk model to say, do you smoke? And if you click yes on that, you provide an active reduction suggestion to that patient. And if it's an elective case, you might delay the surgery somewhat when clinically appropriate to allow them a chance to reduce their smoking duration prior to surgery. So you can see the 360 is not just perioperatively, but what we can do preoperatively. And then for those superficial injuries, what can we do postoperatively, just like we do with central line, to reduce those infections by keeping dressings clean, dry, and intact? The same thing is true for the surgical site, is to try to make sure we protect that patient and instruct the patient when they get home to do a great job keeping the surgical site clean and dry as much as they can to prevent an SSI. So the additional thought that I have on that is just using a 360 approach and not just a perioperative approach to surgical site infection prevention.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Rick Beaver for joining us. If you'd like to contact Rick with additional questions, we've posted his email address in the resource section of our podcast page. Next week, we'll continue our series by discussing the prevention of Clostridium difficile, or CDI. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, a podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.